Welcome to Erotic Wisdom with Mrs. Love.
So hello everybody that is joining me here again for another episode of Erotic Wisdom. Today I'm sharing this space with my beloved friend and teacher and trickster.
Student.
What did he say? Student.
Student.
Friend and enemy and triggerer and everything. Beloved Sai Tzu.
Yes.
Thank you for being with me today, Sai.
Yeah, namaste, ciao.
Yeah, I mean, I wanted to introduce Sai in the fullness of our relating because it's one of these powerful relating that keeps unfolding and so rich to have you in my life, Simon. And, you know, in our time, we had up and downs, we had moments where we were really deeply into each other's life, and then moments where we disappeared. And there were a time where you created a lot of pain in my body. Another time where there was so much love and expansion. And so I really love this. I love that we can offer the whole spectrum of life to each other as friend. Because surely, you know, measuring myself with you in our relating made me grow so much. And every time I wanted to point the finger at you because you made me suffer, I also had to look back at me and where were the places in me that were looking for suffering, or where I didn't speak my truth, where I was less than my totality in the meeting. And that hurt more than the one outside. So it's with a really open heart that I welcome you in this space today.
Thank you.
Yeah, you're definitely one of a kind. Yeah, you're the real profile of the tantric. Which is often a mirror, I think, you know, the good tantric are mirror. And my teacher in India, the teacher that taught me the Tantra Yoga, Bhagavan Shyam, I remember telling me one day that when you sit next to the tantrika, you must always feel a little bit uncomfortable. Otherwise, it's not a tantrika. So there you are.
As long as I get paid, it's fine.
For the insults.
That's the hard part, you know. Mostly people get very upset and you have lots of energy exchange and you're working through the process and you're like, I should be charging for this, really.
Yeah, there are all your triggers, and I can do it so quickly and so skillfully. Took me 20 years of practice.
Yes, you're welcome. The bill is in the post. Yeah, it's good to be here. Thank you, Val. I've also just our journey has been so lovely, and really the pieces you've brought to my life. I mean, most importantly, is your being. And who you are and your commitment to the path, your dedication to this path of unfolding, of tantra, of living it, of the fascinating wonderment of it. You know, just, you know, when we started and you said Bali is a state of mind, you know, this of course is tantra, you know. Heaven and hell are right here always. I just need to tune in. You know,
yeah,
and I appreciate that so much about you, but also the technologies which you brought to my life. You know, the Tantra Yoga, the Kashmiri massage, you know, the artistic, creative side, all our collaborations, everything. It's just, yeah, I love you. I know the last few years we've been kind of like, you know, the paths have been a little bit, you know, we've been in our own wheelhouse, you know, doing a bit of our own work. But the love, I've always felt the love and connection.
Yeah. And there was a time, I want to make a disclosure here, when we were running the sacramental sexual ceremony, the secret sacramental sexual ceremony.
Not so secret anymore now.
Now it's not secret. I want to put it out there. Because I was talking with someone the other day about it, because in the time when we were doing it, they were so secret. And now I see, you know, the mainstream and people charge so much money for this event, and we were completely undercharging. And I was trying to
convince you that we should go global and make a fortune. I was like, come on, Val, you know, we've got something here. We are pioneering. We should go global and cash in.
We have.
I've still been doing some of that work, you know, since you deserted me, abandoned me in it.
Well, at the peak, when the money started to come in, that's my patterns. I walked away.
Yeah, just the hard work.
Just
as it was kind of grounding, you know, in a way. Like, but I got it, because you know what it was? You didn't have Eros for it anymore. It wasn't your excitement anymore to do it. So then you were like, okay, I'm, you know, now it's feeling like work. I'm moving on. And, you know, of course, the Sagittarius, I've got the Capricorn. Ah, now it's work. Okay, now it's fun. Now it's getting hard work. Let's go. So, you know, but I think this medicine is still very much needed, because I think what happens is when people are trying to complete their eros or work through their eros in the wild, so to speak, you know, that's when it has impact on their relationship, it has impact on their family. You know, there's certain things, there's certain energies and experiences and explorations you can have in the container of the ceremony, in the container of the medicine. Which if you do it out there in relationship or in the world, it's going to cause problems. It's going to cause heartache. It's going to cause a lot of drama. Yeah. But in the sacred container, you can have those experiences. You can live that life. You can complete those karmas, right? You can complete those unlived karmas in that container. And it doesn't have to create a lot of chaos or turbulence or drama in your life. And so then you can finish the ceremony, you can close it, you can exit the container, and you've received that medicine. And now you don't necessarily need to live that out. So I still think that it's a very valuable, important medicine. And it's still very much kind of part of the work that I'm looking to do and looking to hold, is to hold that work. And as my medicine work on the other side, on the shamanic side with the plant medicines, deepens. So I keep on getting more downloads about this container where the sacrament is sexual erotic energy, and of how to hold that. So it's still a big piece there, but it was so much fun exploring it and developing it with you, because I remember how we, you know, from each one we would evolve it and develop it and adjust it, and now we're bringing in this, oh no, we can't have that, oh maybe we should challenge our ideas of, you know, we had the no couples rule and the this rule, and then we were starting to challenge those ideas and provoke people who thought that there was this, and it was so much fun. That was
It was really rich. I think it was wonderful. There was theater, I think we held it amazingly beautiful. Yeah. You know, I just want to give a hint for the people that are listening. We were offering a whole night sexual ceremony, because we were inspired by the medicine that people are taking, you know, the San Pedro, the ayahuasca. You drink the cup and sit with it, and you're committed to work your shit, basically, to work what's gonna come up for you, and to sit in your seat and be unwavering with yourself in the process. And, you know, we wanted people to understand that sexuality has the same power, is a medicine. And, you know, we had observed that people take it lightly. I think people take sexuality too lightly in the world. And they take ayahuasca much more seriously. And it's a paradox because ayahuasca maybe come once in your lifetime, but sexuality is there with you holding your hand, you know, forever. So don't you want to deal with that sooner or later? Sooner the better, you know? And then it can become an ally. And so whoever we invited was absolutely secret. No one could share with anybody else's that they were coming. So they didn't know who was there. So it's not about, oh, the pretty one is there, then I'm coming. Oh no, that ugly one is there, so then I'm not coming. We really, we were calling for the personal commitment to work to one own personal sexuality in the face of whatever is presented. And so you couldn't know who else is there. And you just had to say yes or no according to your desire to know yourself. And then I remember we were like, the first hour of the gathering was the most exciting for us, watching him, because of course we knew who was there, and watching everybody quickly screening the surrounding, you know, in terror. Oh my God, is there a pretty one here that I can latch onto? What is gonna happen tonight? Am I safe? And, which is normal, you know, it's part of the natural movement in everybody's body. And then the ceremony would start with practices and dances and meditation and group practices, small group. And so we would thread it throughout the whole night. And yeah, I remember I had a very sweet memory of you sitting in that big throne and yeah, beautiful music played through the night. And it was very initiatory for many people because
people
are not educated in this way in sexuality ever. And there is also this idea that when we are together all naked, it's going to be an orgy and it's doom or perverted.
Play party.
Play party.
Yeah, yes, we're having a play party.
Yeah, true. This is what else it is. And instead, we were all naked together with commitment to know spirit, to know God.
We had a pray party.
Yes, pray party. Play and pray.
Yeah.
And I think for many people shifted it so big, and even if you don't participate actively.
Well, it was such big medicine. I know from each one of those ceremonies the medicine I got, how my relationship and my sexuality shifted from it afterwards, what it changed within me, how it adjusted the trajectory of my relating and my energetic field. Each time was huge. It was a, you know, and of course we're calling in Devi, we're calling in the lineage, we're speaking to the tantric lineage, and it's echoing with the Maithuna, with the ceremonies, you know, that have happened throughout time. Tantrika is gathering in secret to do this work, to do this practice. You know, it has a, you know, the echoes of that and the ripples and, you know, the lines across space-time that we're forming, because in that zone it becomes timeless and it connects with all the ceremonies which have been done in the tantric lineage in this way, working with this medicine. It felt very ancient also, you know, as well as us kind of also working it out, because, you know, we weren't taught this, you know, we were working with some of the ceremony structures that are used around the plant medicine work. But of course it must be different because, you know, in those ceremonies they often have men and women on different sides of the room, and God forbid you take your clothes off, you know. That was a big, beautiful piece of work that we collaborated on.
The medicine taught us, you know, we were also devoted student of the power of sexuality. And I think that is the shaman, the one that recognizes that it knows nothing. And they bow to the teaching. And so I had to create a space for the teaching to come through. And so, although we were very skilled in holding the space, we were still very humbled by the teaching that were coming through each and every event. I remember also the unpacking of every ceremony, took a lot of energy and time because it was big. And then the reconstruction of the next ceremony. Anyway, I'm just putting it out there. Maybe in the next year we could throw another one of those. I would love to play with you in this way again. Why not?
Let's talk. Yeah, we can talk offline. Yeah. We can figure it out. Yeah.
And so I just want to, I realize I actually haven't introduced you properly because I do this, you know, for me, this is a salon where I sit with my friend and the people that inspire me. But for the people that are listening, I just want to mention that Simon Sai lives in Cape Town, where I am at the moment. And he's a, how do you define yourself these days? I'm going to let you introduce yourself.
Sure. The qualifications, right?
The qualification. Qualification. Give me your qualification.
Qualification. The qualification and the qualification. Perfect. I love it. Look, I'm a tantrika. I'm also initiated in the lines of Sangoma. I was early, my mother was Osho devotee. So age 12, I took Osho Nyasanyas. I dropped it at age 36. Age 31. I serve Iboga medicine. I've spent time in Gabon. I'm not Bwiti initiate, but I'm initiated into the Southern African shamanic lines of Sangoma. I'm a journeyer on the path of spirit. I'm a lover of God. And for me, it's been really about grounding that frequency of the divine into this earthly realm. And that for me is Tantra. Meeting of the holy and the profane, and how do we live with them together? And it's been my deeper study, this deep study of how to be fully in the density of material reality and yet to hold the channel of spirit.
In the density, transparency.
And I just keep exploring different ways of doing it. And, since 2013, I've been holding space for others on their journeys. So the last 8 to 9 years, helping others in their exploration of becoming themselves, ultimately, it's how do I become myself? How do I become a lover, a life artist, artistry and love? That's ultimately what has come down to me, the art and love of living. And dying, of course. the primary path I think has been Tantra that I've walked. But finding this also where it's really, I think it was your Bhagavan who told me, Whitney, another student of the man who was teaching Tantra Yoga, he was saying that shaman is an old tantric word for tantrika. So shaman, tantrika, that they're the same word. Mm-hmm. And I really, these are the two paths which I've really been walking, some of the various traditional medicine paths, the shamanic paths and the tantric paths. And finding that they're not really separate, that the rose has the flower and the petals, and it also has the thorns. Mm. And so the path of the ordeals, I used to see them as two things, the path of bliss and the path of ordeals. But then I would find that everybody on the bliss path was always suffering, and everybody on the ordeal path was always entering into these states of bliss. So I'm like, yes, it's one path, right? The thorns and the petals are inseparable. But really finding that way and finding the appropriate technologies, finding the ancient traditions which are shared and also useful because they hold such a lineage space And then also finding the new ways of totally reversing all of that and inventing on the spot exactly the medicine we need. And, you know, that kind of, that contrast between completely doing it yourself and making it up and it being fresh each moment, and the deep lineage of tradition and finding the ways for that to merge. So really, it's hard to put a name on it so much, yeah. but really a lover of existence in all its forms. Yeah.
And I want to say what you're saying about using the ancient technology and then, you know, break them apart and making it up on the spot. I think that's also where it's at. That is absolute spontaneity, you know, and also the other tradition that I'm holding from Daniel Odier, my teacher of the Tandava, is very big on spontaneity, which only come when you have mastery. So first you learn everything, you learn all the ancient technique and the technology, and then you let it all go and you present in the moment with absolute spontaneity, which it might look like you breaking everything, but you are not, because it exists inside of you and you can just be really spontaneous in how you decide to act in the moment with different people or different situation.
Yeah, I think that of course always the danger with that is, you know, somebody thinks, I'm ready to tear up the script. And now, you know, I am a free avaduta and I can live crazy wisdom. Meantime, it's running an ego pattern and actually being kind of abusive and using that to excuse the behavior. So this is where the peer group is so important, to get those reflections of, you know, are you free and spontaneous and beyond reproach? Or actually, are you just bullshitting and using that as, and of course that very crazy wisdom mantra has been used so often as an excuse for, you know, not sitting on the cushion or doing the practice or doing the 1,000 repetitions or doing the work. So, you know, we need to be so careful with the highest teachings, because the highest teachings, when they're taken before ready, it's poison. Yeah.
It's lovely to hear you speak like this, Simon. You've got some experience of this, don't you? You learned the hard way. I thought, I remember when I first met you, I was so intimidated by you. I thought you were a wild cowboy with no rules. Cowboy of Tantra.
it's an important phase, you know, the phase of the rebel, you know, and this, of course, my first guru was Osho, you know, who was the quintessential rebel, you know, it was all about the roar of rebellion. What does, you know, we must, who is it, it's the French philosopher, the one who talks, Camus. Camus says, you know, we must become so incredibly free that our very existence is an act of rebellion. You know, this was Osho. You know, we must be so free that our existence is an act of rebellion. But then, of course, we have Khalil Gibran, who, when he speaks of freedom, he says, the chain which binds you and glitters the brightest is the one you call freedom. You know, you are so attached to your freedom that you are enslaved by it.
Yeah.
You know? So, and this is, you know, of course we peel the onion and we peel it and it says freedom, and then it's freedom from freedom, and it's freedom from freedom from freedom. And, you know, we keep going.
The freedom of being alive, of being in the totality, I think it's no more freedom from. If it's freedom from, it's never freedom, no? It's always reaction.
That's it. Yeah.
So freedom of being a spontaneous human being. Yeah, this is mastery. Anyway, this is ultimate mastery. Very, very fine line, difficult terrain to walk.
Padmasambhava, he says, you know, although my view is as high as the sky, my observance of the laws of karma is as fine as barley flour. And so, you know, this is it, you know, like, you know, we are, you know, we can have the view, this tremendous view of everything, but then we also need to come down to the microscopic and take care of the absolute details.
Yeah. Yeah, I've been feeling this very much lately in my life, you know, outside the phase where I wanted to be completely transcendent and of the spirit and of the gods. And now I just want to be domestic. I find pleasure in having 3 meals a day at home, simple, and have routine. It's nourishing my heart so much. But it can't be of the sky only. It needs to be of the household also. And we are householder now, you know. So there is such beauty in that simplicity. And also, you know, I was living in Bali for 4 months and I traveled there with my daughter with the possibility of maybe relocating there. And she, in a sense, made me come back because, you know, she was really not happy. And you can't have a happy life with an unhappy child, you know, and not because I'm taking direction from my child, but because her joy is my joy. And so bringing her back and seeing her joy brought so much joy in my being. And now I'm so happy to be here. So I love my domestication at this moment. And coming back home, you know, led by my daughter that says, no, here is what we're going to do because I want to go to school and you need to find a home. And it feels my actually next level of awakening in the domestic. So, but I want to take this conversation to a specific conversation, exchange, because I received an invitation from you, Sai, a few weeks ago that inspired me so much. It was such a delight to look at it and read it, and it awoke so many emotions in my body, so many feelings. And it moved me to invite you to the podcast and to talk about this. And I have to say, lately, very little moved me enough to have a conversation on my podcast. It's a very slow podcast. I don't produce conversation every week because I think people talk too much about everything already. And I want to really distill my conversation and wait when there is something that really deeply moved me. And this invitation really deeply moved me from you. And I think it's really beautiful that we can share it with the listener and people that might would have an interest in coming closer and do the work, especially men. And in the current time, there is this awakening of the sacred masculinity. It's present, it's happening, and I've been sitting in women's circle for so long, for many years, for 8 years, 10 years, and the women, keep hearing the women, and what about the men, and what about the men, and I'm excited that the time is now, the work for the men is happening, and of course, it needed to happen first with the women to create this container, the womb. And the container is here, is created, is done. Now we're doing refinement. And so it's really beautiful to see that you're bringing forth this work with men. And I really love the way you present it because I also see work done for men. And of course I've seen it in Bali. It's an overload of all of that. And it's the warrior man, it's the new man, it's the new lover. There is always a flavor about it that is of, conqueror somehow. This man that must come together and cry together, but the crying is another thing to conquer and go to, you know? And we gotta find our tenderness together. It's like climbing, still climbing that mountain.
Yeah.
And the way your presentation landed in my mailbox was just like an hibiscus flower blossoming or a rose unfolding. The tenderness and the care really touched me, really inspired me. And I passed the invitation to a lot of men in my life. Let's see which one respond. So I've got my phone in my hand because I've got the invitation here. Yes. And I want to read through something. So first, the name is called Vajra Heart Dhaka Transmission. And it's not a course, it's not a seminar, it's a cohort. Let's start with that. A cohort.
It's a good word, huh?
Yeah.
You know, I mean, as much as I am inspiring this and I am encouraging and cheering this on, you know, I don't want to be the leader. You know, it's not this hierarchy now where I'm the guru and I'm, you know, really what I'm trying to do is I'm trying to, when ready, to hand this over to the collective, the cohort, to the group, and to hold it as a mutual reflection space. And it's becoming more and more that, you know, this is now going into the third year of this practice, of this work of men with men. There are, apart from me, there are three remaining from the first cohort. And the second cohort was a little more successful. We, I think we have seven remaining from that cohort.
How many to start with?
One, two, three, four, maybe 13, 12 or 13, uh-huh. Around there. So I think that, you know, the first time we ended up like a third, and this time we're closer to just a bit over half, you know, so 30% to 60% of continuing on. Also, you know, we have just started with some of the initiatory and deep commitment processes in this work, commitment to this work and commitment to one another. So now, you know, the container's a bit bigger. We're ready to hold and to receive more, you know, probably now. I think we'll see how the applications go, but, you know, maybe ready for another 20, or maybe even as many as 25, you know, men to come in. But I've kind of seen, you know, the first time when it was just me holding the space, there wasn't enough holding. So there were only three who came through. Now with me and the other three holding, there was more holding space for the other, the new men who came in. So, you know, as there are more men who are able to hold this frequency, it's able to grow and to hold more. But it's been very organic. It's been really slow. This cohort and you know, and a transmission of the union of the sex and the love, right? The Vajra and the heart. And finding that place of, and it's very tender, you know, I like this conquering. I mean, it's so interesting because in our group, I mean, you know, Dhaka, it means sky flower, right? And what I think has started, what we've started seeing in this exploration is really, it's like this kind of, the space of masculine musing that Dhaka is, that it's really finding the dot in the yin yang, you know. So you've got the white, the conqueror, the masculine energy, but within that there's the dark dot, you know, and it's finding that concentrated part. And interestingly enough, you know, Dakini has this kind of warrior sword of cutting through, you know, so it's almost finding the white in the black field. You know, so it's like really, you know, where Dakini finds this this cutting energy, Dhaka really finds this this sort of like very soft opening, you know, where the, you know, where, you know, our genitalia, you know, the male genitalia is very yang, but the male heart is very yin. You know, it's very soft and it's very much receptive. And when you connect with that, and then that flow of energy between the yang of the sex and the yin of the heart. And so it's a strong masculine, but it's kind of supple. It's, you know, it's less like a sword and more like a serpent, you know.
Yeah.
It's got that kind of flexible strength. Yeah, please.
I want to read a passage that you wrote that I really loved. This is a transparent, iridescent, diamond feeling way. So beautiful. The path of the unwavering heart. Here we embrace the never-ending process of unification of Vajra, which is diamond, is a Sanskrit word for diamond, and heart, love, and sex, learning and practicing being both lover and noble gentleman. a long time. The noble gentleman. It's so beautiful. Not a weekend course, not a set of teaching. It is a deep commitment to a different way of embodying masculinity, serpentine and supple, fiercely tender, and always as awake as possible. And I love this, that is as awake as possible. You know, when I see all these course that they promise things, all the things that every course on the market today are promising, I know it's not true, because if they were true, we don't need another course ever. You know, they all promise resolution of drama. They all promise enlightenment. They all promise the top notch. It makes me wonder, how come we have so many courses then? We should all be done. If all those things were to be truth. So I really love this honesty, the fiercely tender and as awake as possible. That's enough. That's amazing that there is even just that commitment. And serpentine and supple will be a beautiful way of masculinity. And so maybe you want to speak a little bit how it structures. It's not a weekend course, and it seems like even a year maybe is not enough.
We're into year three now, so
yeah.
You know, the way
we do it is... I just want to add this. I remember one time I challenged you when you were with your first cohort, and I said, how are you going to end? How do you know that these guys are ready to be DACA just after 1 year? And you told me, yeah, I just trained them, but I'm not qualifying them.
Yes.
They're not ready. There's no qualification. It's not promised, you know. I'm going on for another year and another year. I don't know when I'm going to qualify them.
Yes. Yeah. You know, I think... I think the graduation is determined by your peers. So, you know, those who are recognized as Dhaka and Dakini will ultimately qualify you and say, yes, you're here. You know, you can stand with us. Otherwise, you know, you go and sit at the top table or whatever table it is. And, you know, people are polite, but they're not really sharing their food with you or something. Like, yeah, maybe you're not quite ready. And we've all seen this, you know, people who claim the title before readiness, because there isn't a certifying body. It's not like, oh, you've done the exam, now you get the stamp. You know, in a way, we do self-certify in this path. But, you know, it's very embarrassing if you jump up and you go, right, I am, you know, the great one, this and that, you know. But it was interesting in the last ritual process we did, you know, I received a new title in that process. I received this title, Siddha, appeared. I'm like, what's this I'm hearing? I'm being told Siddha now. I'm like, okay, I must go research this title because see what it means, you know. Mm. So, you know, it's the journey. The structure that we have is what we do is we meet every Monday. And one Monday is for transmission.
It's Monday.
So, Monday, yes. The day, the crescent moon of Shiva, right? Yeah. And 1 week is transmission. And sometimes the transmission is from me. Sometimes I invite a guest. I would love, you know, invite you. invite other people. Actually, we've had almost no guests, but the idea is now we're kind of entering that phase now where we want to have more guests to come do transmission. And then the second, then the alternate Monday is into small groups, 3-4, and it's unpacking and exploring and sharing and the technologies and the teachings and what am I working with and what am I going through and really releasing parts and pieces. And then there's another transmission. It's just this sort of rhythm. And then eventually we're like, it feels like it's time to enter ceremony. And then we synchronize and we enter ceremony together at the same time. We say prayers, we call in the frequencies, and we do practice, ceremonial practice. And then after ceremony, we share. And we share our work. And so it's this sort of like slow cook of moving through the layers. And then it becomes apparent the medicine that that different people need. You know, so also with this particular, with the last cohort, the three from the first cohort and I had a, you know, we would chat. How's so-and-so doing? How's so-and-so doing? So-and-so needs a bit more of this. Have a chat with them. And, you know, the more experienced ones, the journeyman cohort, we're also holding the freshmen who are coming in. I think of that, you know, the American schooling system, you have the freshmen, and then you have the sophomores, and then you have the seniors, you know, in the three-year process that they have. Mm-hmm. And so, you know, the freshmen are fresh and the sophomores are somewhere in between. And then the seniors are more senior, you know, and they've just been at it for longer. But it's like, you know, it becomes apparent that certain people need certain things and they're invited to do that work.
Do they have homework? Do you give them homework, assignments, or things to
use? I try, and sometimes it works, sometimes it doesn't work, you know, sometimes they're terrible. And like, I'm like, okay, who did that meditation practice? And then one person's like, yeah, I did. I'm like, okay. But you know, there's no energy to have this force at all. So I can never go like, oh, you didn't do your homework, you know, like now you're in trouble. It's like, okay, well, I'll bring it up again, maybe in 3 or 4 weeks. Like, this is a really important piece, please do this. You know, and if there's no errors for it, you know, nobody does it. But if I keep asking long enough, then eventually people do. And, you know, and then sometimes I point out, oh, okay, we're coming to a place where we're going to maybe ask some people to leave and those who've not really been participating, you know, just think about, is this the right thing for you right now? You know, are you really participating? You know, are you willing to face yourself in this way? To do this work. And then sometimes it's like, I don't think it is right, you know. And then normally, you know, we have a conversation and that person's like, yeah, I realize I'm not really participating, I'm stepping out. And they step out. And then also, because, you know, at a certain point, it becomes aware that the whole frequency is getting dragged down by certain energies, which are not participating fully. So it's like, if you don't participate fully, it's fine. It's so spacious, you know. You know, it's kind of like, you know, some people, and, you know, somebody's missing a lot of calls, you know, they, you know, you haven't seen them for, you know, a month, or they make one call a month. Then it's like, are you here? You know, are you really doing this? Because you're not making the calls. There's no rule that you have to make the calls. But if you're not making the calls, then why are you here? You know, let's just be honest about it. Yeah. You know, I've been making the calls for 3 years. So, you know, it can be done.
It feels for me that really it's a calling for devotion, you know, like the way you present
absolutely.
It. It's a Vajra Heart Dhaka transmission. It's not a course to gain something or to gain the title. It's to receive a transmission. And then, as you say, the title will arise in the being spontaneously if there is enough devotion. Because also you're charging very little. You know, when I got to the end and to see the exchange is... it's a symbol almost financially. And so, you know, in this world, I see we're consuming spirituality now, like we're consuming the resources of the planet. It's saddened me deeply, you know, and especially when the rare time I go up on Instagram and I see the spiritual market, it's like we're consuming the spiritual
advice. I mean, it feels like it's a phase, you know, it's a phase that people are going through, and then, you know, they want to leave the corporate job, so I become a coach. And then I get tired of being a coach, so I start holding workshops. And, you know, these people are in their study, you know, and this is the accelerated learning of them. And they need to finance the study some way, because the old structures of there being a monastery where you would be supported to go and study no longer exists. And the kind of monasteries which we need no longer exist, where you can go and enter into the monastery and be supported. So it's like, okay, we're late Kali Yuga capitalism. So the monastery must look like the spiritual marketplace. You know, this is the only way, you know. So it's like, yes, I feel that, you know, probably giving sacred hand jobs and, you know, financing your spiritual journey that way is probably more honest than posing as a teacher and, you know, getting people in. But, you know, those are the real warriors, you know, the ones who are willing to do the spiritual hand jobs and make their living that way. Those are the ones I bow to, you know, because that is the true, you know, that is the true being in the, you know, in the charnel ground, you know, of human sexuality, which has, you know, so much challenge about it still.
But my point that I wanted to make here is thank you for this reflection, actually. Mm-hmm. It gives it a beautiful context to look into that when I feel so saddened. So thank you. You give me a beautiful point of view. But the way I was saying this, that everything this day is so expensive, but people then, I notice the student pay the money. The more they pay, the more they show up. And you're doing it in the opposite way. This is not a big payment. How big is your heart? How big is your desire? How much you really want to be part of this? You know, you have to still participate, although there hasn't been the promise of anything to be gained also. But just to be in the fire of your love. And this is really feminine, because to gain something at the end of the journey is the masculinity of the spiritual approach. And what I love that is really feminine is that there is no promise in your cohort. We just come in together and we see what's unfold and see how deep goes your love. So how many mandala are you gonna make?
I think in the flyer you'll see I've got one quote by Borges a bit later on. Maybe read that one, because that's the kind of promise.
Borges, here. Yeah. I can give you my loneliness, my darkness, the anger of my heart. I am trying to bribe you with uncertainty, with danger and with defeat.
There we go. We will bribe you with uncertainty, danger, and defeat. There's a wonderful poem by Rania Maria Rilke. And, you know, these are the men, you know, the poets, Rilke and Borges. And, you know, these are the men who I really admire, not the Alexanders the Great. You know, but Rilke has this one poem where he says this: there's this angel, and the angel is so great that that nobody can ever beat it. You know, if you wrestle with this angel, you are guaranteed to be defeated, you know. But he said, ultimately, this is how we grow, by being defeated by ever greater and greater things. You know, so it's like, you know, there's, you're never going to succeed. Ultimately, you will die. You will lose. The world will not be perfectly enlightened. The whole realms will remain. It's like, you know, you will be defeated. But every time you'll be defeated by something a bit larger.
You know? Yeah. And by fighting the angel, you get the transmission anyway, if you get close enough.
if you're lucky, the angel will do Brazilian jiu-jitsu on you, and you will be really wrapped in a tight embrace, and maybe you die an orgasm as you lose.
way to die, you know, in the arm of the enlightened one.
Yeah, exactly.
Mm. Yeah. So I wanted to also speak about, you know, this term Dakka and Dakini. I mean, you mentioned it somewhere. I don't know if now here in the presentation, that in truth, in the traditional texts, there is no record of this word Dakka. Mm. You know, there is Dakini in traditional tantra, and that's it. And Dakka, for me, I started seeing in the resurrection of modern tantra, of new tantrism, because now we have the Dakini. What about the man? Let's have a Dakka. So we have a Dakka and a Dakini. And for me, it's the creation of the ego that wants to find balance in things. And sometimes there is no balance and life is unfair, as we spoke about. Mm. It's just unfair. But for me, I've always been recognizing the Dakinis in the body of man. Like for me, you are definitely a Dakini. There's no doubt about that, because you bring that fierceness and that trickster also element. And your body is often being extremely feminine. You know, when we were doing the sacramental ceremony, I thought you were the feminine. And I was only in the masculine, actually, you know. And why did you choose to use the word Dakka and not make a Dakini transmission for men?
I think once upon a time I did some research looking for the term Dakka, because I heard this, that there was no term Dakka, and I certainly hadn't read it from the original texts. I think I did find reference to it on Google Scholar in some of the texts. So I want to, you know, double check that. I don't know if it is not used at all. I think it is used, but much more rarely. I think it might have been used. But, you know, again, what's wonderful Swami Rahasya, our dear friend, you know, he always has this joke, you know, he would always say, yes, all the crazy neo-tantricas. And of course, then you have on the other side, the museum tantra, you know, where everything must be according to the book and by the tradition. And if it's not in the book, we're not going to do it. And of course, you know, the Mahasiddhas on the tantric path would go and piss on the book, you know, and laugh, you know, like, what do you mean? You know, this is not tantra. You know, we are following the text and we are making a god out of the, you know, the ancient text. And if it's, and, you know, and there is that among certain traditional tantric lineages, which have a very kind of sneering attitude towards neo-tantra. And of course, you know, it's good to poke fun at neo-tantra, because it's, you know, like a lot of it is all about sexuality, and it's, you know, it's not very deep. But at the same time, you know, are we allowing, you know, tantra is this very fluid, fresh, alive current. And if it's not alive, and if it's not merging and transforming and evolving, then we're not being tantricas, you know?
Mm-hmm.
Yeah. So,
alive, so living practitioner.
Exactly. So, you know, like always, it's again, you know, always as usual in tantra, you're walking the razor's edge. And, you know, it's this razor's edge between becoming fluffy and losing the depth. And then also renewing and reviving and having this revival. And this is where it's really beautiful that there is this kind of revival of traditional tantra, where people have got bored of neo-tantra and they've been like, okay, there's got to be more to it.
Yeah, you know,
give me a mantra, please.
Yes.
You know,
yeah,
you know, can I do some puja? You know, like, yeah. What, you know, like, you know, can I understand a little bit, you know, about, you know, what is Mahamudra?
So you know? That's why I'm asking, because in the neo-tantrics current, I see that often the word Dakka and Dakini relate to sexual shaman or men and women that use practice and technique particularly oriented towards physical sexuality. Mm-hmm. And so sacred hand jobs. And so if you're a Dakka, you do yoni massage. And if you're a Dakini, you do linga massage. Yeah. This is the way that this immensity has been brought down to such a limited detail, which for me, it's a little bit of a pity, because I think, let's call it sacred hand job, is very clear what it is. It gives power to the hand job that is holy in itself. Why not? And instead, I saw that in the current, in this contemporary current, it's almost hiding behind a jargon that that seems so spiritual. And then actually, what we really want to do, we do the sexual awakening work, which it's beautiful and it's absolutely essential. Don't get me wrong. There's nothing unholy about that. But sometimes I think we'll be more honoring of the work to call it for what it is. It gets a bit confusing, you know.
Yeah.
If someone is a Dakini, means that she's gonna do erotic work with men. You know, often I get approached like this as a Dakini by men that just want to engage in erotic work without also bringing the study and the practices. And so I just want to read this piece, because then maybe you can give me a full answer about it all. So there is in your invitation, that under there is a chapter that says for the who, and you invite the men who wish to dwell as much as possible into the mystery of the feminine current while embodying as a man, opening the gates to sexual integration and healing, either in relationships or even professionally. I must confess, my hope is that those who undertake this training will, once the sexual eros is stabilized and the integrity grounded, consider holding space for women or a beloved's awakening and healing. This work is so needed right now. So I want to address a little bit of this, because, you know, in the, that maybe someone that read this, you know, I see many courses for men which are Dakka training,
where the 2-week men... Dakka training.
Exactly what you mean, but they are called like that, which means that at the end of the 4-week course, you know the anatomy of the yoni, and you know how to give a yoni massage, and this qualify you as a Dakka, and you're gonna become a teacher of the sexual mystery to women, and maybe an awakener. And
I actually, course, I had words with Charles Muir about just this topic. And I said, are you fucking joking? You're calling this Dakka and Dakini training and you're giving people 2 weeks training. I said, and it's not even, I said, I don't care about your marketing and you're selling your course, and I understand you want to make money and you're using the terms to make money. That's fine. I said, that's no problem. Go ahead. You do you, you know, but I said, the problem is that people take this title, and as soon as they start using that title or the term, it carries a frequency. There are guardians of the lineage. There are frequencies which they open up to. And this is going to then start to cook them really hard, right? And maybe they're not ready, and maybe they're not agreeing to be cooked. Maybe they wanted to just give some holy hand jobs and learn how to light some incense and learn some anatomy. And they didn't want to be a Dakini and be cooked in the way that you're going to be cooked if you start to claim this title, because it has a weight behind it and you suddenly start using it. And I said, so you are inviting people to take this title after a 2-week course and they are going to get cooked. And I said, and the karma sitting behind that cooking, I said, you know, is really immense. And so he came out, he responded to me and he said, it's fine, I'll take on all the karma. And I said, okay, we hold you to that.
Yeah, but does it take the cooking? No, how do they doesn't. Deal with the cooking?
No, I mean, come on. It's like this whole story. It's really, look, I used to get very upset about it. And, you know, I used to want to, you know, reclaim the word Tantra from, you know, from the back page of, you know, the erotic masseuses and the weekend courses on sexuality. And then, you know, I had to sit with this because, you know, this was my own reaction, response, discomfort. And who am I to question Devi, and the way in which she is bringing forth the creation, you know, and just, and then I'm realizing, well, maybe it is using the good old tantric bait and switch, you know, it's using the allure of erotic, the allure of sexuality to draw people in. And then, and indeed, many people, they start with neo-tantra and then they take more steps and then they discover more and then they find your work and they're doing neo-tantra and they're doing, you know, they're doing some sexual awakening work and then they discover Valentina's work and now they're practicing Tandava and they are doing Kashmiri massage and they're doing Tantra yoga. And then they discover some, you know, some mantra work and some mantra teaching or they, you know, and then suddenly the work's going deeper. And, you know, and all of this being drawn by the allure of the erotic. But also, what does Tantra do? It always goes to the place where there is the greatest shadow, where there is the greatest compression. So, you know, and sometimes it was around, you know, the Tantrikas were the wizards. They were the ones who were casting the spells, you know, or they were the ones doing some sort of sacrifice. You know, it always goes to the place where there is the greatest shadow, where there's the greatest rejection. Yeah. It goes to the charnel ground, you know. So in our culture right now, that charnel ground is human relating and human sexuality. It's such a disaster. It's so broken. You know, the relations between men and women in our love, in our relating, in our sexuality. There's so much wounding. There's so much pain. There's been so much suffering from childhood, which we have. So of course, that's where Tantra goes. And it becomes all about that. Maybe in 300 years, it's going to be all about eating, or it's going to be all about meditating. It's going to be all about something else. It's going to be what is, you know, where is the compression? That's where Tantra will move. That is how the current flows. And it's weaving and integrating that with the awakening frequencies to bring the rainbow into that place of darkness.
So poetic. I love that.
So
is bringing the rainbow in the faces of darkness. So but in your cohort specific.
Yeah. So in my cohort, I mean, what's happening now is there are a few online sessions are happening, you know, so this is after two, almost 3 years, you know, and it's like, okay, now I've said to a few, you're ready to practice. Start with holding space online around it. So we're not even in person yet. I mean, we are in the Zoom era. So, you know, start there and just start in that place. And interestingly enough, you know, a lot of the cohort are in quite committed partnerships. So the, you know, the idea of them suddenly now going and doing touch work practice, it's quite activating for their partners. So they've been like, oh, I can't really do that yet. So I'm like, perfect, this is great. You work through it with your partner. When the readiness arises in you, maybe the readiness arises within her. And it's all ready at the same time. And it's not going to cause any ruffled feathers in your partnership for you to be doing this work. And it's actually really nice that they are in a partnership, because that just grounds it so much. It means that you can't get lost. And look, I made every mistake in the book doing this work. So, you know, that's been part of what I've been saying here. It's like, you know, learn from my mistakes and where I let my eros or my desire for relationship infiltrate into my work, and I wasn't able to keep that separation, and I wasn't able to keep the container, and you know, I paid the price and made amends, mostly, I hope. But you know, I'm also very honest about this. You know, the teachers who I had were not also able to give me that grounding in the teaching that I received in doing this work, and so now I'm hoping to do it a bit differently. And to share like how important it is to have this this really clear container for this work. But also to go really slowly. And also the key thing is you need to work through your own eros and stabilize that. And it's not to, you know, complete it or not have any eros, but you need to really understand, you know, where's your sexual wounding? Where's your, you know, what's driving you in your sexuality? And you need to start completing some of your sexual karmas. And then on the back of that, then you're actually able to hold space for somebody and do some of the work in the realm of sexuality. And I think it's important to acknowledge that that is still a huge part of the human experience. And it's associated with Tantra for a reason. It's not that it's wrong. It's just that maybe it shouldn't have, you know, people need to be corrected that Tantra is sexuality, but it's not only sexuality. It's much, much more.
It's being sexual with reality in a sense for me.
Yeah, namaste.
With the whole experience of being alive. Yeah. So for me, it's just the place where I just wanted to offer you my piece of caution because many men are really drawn by this idea that they can become sexual healers. And then again, the masculinity, it's there. There is no real vulnerability.
Yes.
And all my year of discovery and exploration and practice and personal experience, I've come to the realization that when a man and a woman come together sexually, the woman is always a teacher. You know, when we are in the realm of eroticism, deep eroticism, the man is always a student of the woman in bed. And I've seen so many Tantra teacher, you know, holding great space in the classroom and then in the bedroom, making the biggest fuck up because they were held as teacher. And so the women would put themselves aside and hold this man as teacher because they were a teacher in the classroom. And I really realized that, you know, when the penis entered the vagina, the man is, it's a student, but the woman also is a student of the mystery of sexuality, which she is the container. And so I've really like to share this with men that are on the path of healing as well, just to have this humble approach that, maybe in the classroom, of course, there could be a teacher of classical Tantra or even female anatomy that is more well-versed than a woman herself that never looked into the book. And like the gynecologist maybe knows more about the biology of the how the body work and the yoni work. But when we enter the realm of erotic connection, when the man penetrates a woman, he's always a student of her beingness. And so I'm just saying this, not for you, but for, I'm generalizing now, I'm putting it out there for maybe some men that are listening, that they believe this idea that they can heal a woman with their penis. Maybe they can heal a woman with their heart. But certainly so the heart must bring their offering in humble devotion, but when the penis enter the yoni, always has to happen with utmost humble devotion and knowing that that's when we enter the mystery of life, not only of love, but of life itself in the womb. And so in that moment, no matter how well-versed or well-trained this man is, in that moment, he become a humble student. And by doing that, it would serve whatever needs to be moved.
Well, I think this is the point, or a point, is that in order for the man to be the servant, in order for the man to hold space, you know, to actually be available for the process that, because, you know, when a woman is moving deep in the sexual mystery, you know, the man must be able to be present, to be truly present. He must be able to not be going into his own erotic fantasies. He must be able to not be going into his own explosion ejaculation necessarily. He must also be able to hold her tears, hold her rage, to be present for that. And that is where the healing transmission comes, you know, and can come. And that is how a man can be of service in the holding of the space, you know, in the bringing of that that diamond, the diamond through which the light refracts to make the rainbows, right? And that requires doing this internal work, you know, doing his own work in relation to that, in order to hold that space. So it isn't, it's not a doing.
Right? Yes.
So you know, nobody can heal anybody else.
Yeah.
What does Osho say? He says, there's nothing you can do to become enlightened. It is completely an accident. Meditation makes you a little bit accident prone. So, you know, it's like this, you know, you can't heal. There's no guarantee that it's going to work. Yeah. Even the, you know, the great Mahasiddha, you know, who can arrive, we can have Drukpa Kunli or Padmasambhava in the room, and maybe it doesn't work out because it's just not the right connection of frequencies, you know, that is actually happening.
It's like, but, making that healing is like offense. It cannot be given. It's only taken. You can't give healing, but if I'm ready, I can take the healing from this encounter.
Right, and if possible, to create the space, because it is, you know, and there's also, I mean, primarily, I'm really in deep agreement that mostly men should be working with men and women should be working with women, but there are times when in the work, not in our loving, in working, that we do need the polarity to work with. You know, so men do need to work with women and women do need to work with men, you know, at certain moments. And it's how then, you know, is that moment. So now a woman has done a lot of work with women and she's, you know, done all her body work and now she's ready to confront that, you know, the childhood pain and the healing, and that's going to need to happen with the body of a man. Is it always right that it should be her lover? Does her lover have the skills? Does her husband have the skills? Is he the right person for it? Sometimes not. Sometimes it's better that it's not the husband, you know, because there's going to be a rage or there's going to be something come up and the husband's going to take offense. And next thing, the relationship's going to be spun out. So maybe it is, you know, I really feel that there is a role, you know, in this work for those who are able to hold space in that moment of the unfurling of ourself in our deep sexual essence. And so, you know, I think that there is a possibility for that. And so, you know, as much as the Dakka and Dakini trainings and whatever, you know, they're mad. You know, I mean, and then, you know, you look at the more formal places where they're doing what's it called, the you know, sexual surrogacy work, and you know, where they have the bodies and the psychologist tests you, and you know, and it's got all these various strong rules, and you know, and the, you know, and I think, you know, obviously those people do amazing work also.
Yeah.
Is there something in between, and you know, and where we can also be saying the prayers and call in the frequencies and the energy of the ritual, which we know is so strong? And you know, I'm not saying I have an answer there, because there aren't any graduates, or there, you know, it's not being tested, but I'm saying we're willing to be in the exploration and the investigation of this. And I'm saying we're going really slow, and then after every session, even if it's just a talk session, come back with the pod and with the people and share and unpack. And also always it's known that that this man, you know, if some of the men in my group, if a woman is working with the men in my group, they know that if there's any issues, they can come to the group and they can raise it, you know. So there's a place to go and to say, it's not just some random guy you found on Craigslist or, you know, who you're now working with. Yeah. It's somebody who's part of a study group, a very sincere, devoted study group, who's been working for a long time, and who also invites the reflection of women of power, you know, always, you know, at some point, you know, the men who are in the study, you know, I always say to them, I say, you know, go and work with, here are these women, here's a list of, you know, five or six women who will put you through your paces, you know, after working with them, you will know, you know, where you're at. They will give you a very clear reflection of where you're at.
Mm. Beautiful. Yeah. Thank you for that. I feel, yeah, your sharing was very, very rich and yeah, blessing.
Blessing. Yeah. You know, it was the same as you, you know, like the woman was saying, where are the men? Where are the men? And I always got that question. And for a while I tried to be all of the men, you know, in my youthful arrogance. Let's say it's like, no, why do you need all these men? I'm here. which was John's joke, you know, but yeah, you know, I think I started taking that seriously. I was like, okay, well, let's start this work then. Let's invite some men. Let's see who wants to do this. And there are men, and it's been so amazing, Val. It was interesting. There was this moment in the first cohort, and the group had split. And in one group, there were all the fathers. And in another group, there were all the yogis, you know? And the yogis and the fathers were walking together. And I was between both groups. And I was kind of moving between these groups of the yogis and the fathers. And eventually the ones which continued were the fathers, because they've got the stamina, you know, the parenting, it teaches you this real stamina to keep going. And also I think that devotion of the heart. And so, you know, it's been really interesting to see the evolution of this practice and to see who's stayed with it and stayed with the work and being able to continue to surrender deeper and deeper into it.
And I think the fathers also have selflessness, you know?
Yes.
Because sometimes in this work with sexuality, you know, this idea that I'm here to, because I want to help you, the truth is that I'm completely mesmerized by you. And I think the truth for many men that are completely besotted by the exquisite beauty of woman, why not? I mean, Devi is enchanting. And instead of being vulnerable and admitting that, they become the healer because I can help you. And in reality, I'm serving myself, but it looks like I'm serving you.
Yeah.
And so when I'm hearing you talking this morning, what I'm receiving is that you are very aware of this dynamic. Maybe you know it for yourself too. You've been there. And there is so much vulnerability around this now that in this work, it looks like first and foremost is the work of self-development. And even to do then hold space for another, it's still my work for my self-development. That's what I'm meaning. Then we become also student. Me too, as a teacher, I'm still a student. My student, tell me how to be a better teacher. My student teach me how to teach, you know, and so I'm always humbled by my students. So it also, though it appears, you know, I'm here to give, I'm always receiving. And the fact that I know this allows me to keep the work moving and doesn't get entrapped in the ego.
Yeah. And it's been the most precious space, though. You know, like the men who are doing it now, they value it so much. They're so grateful. And the tenderness and the beauty shining. I mean, I took a picture before our last, we did a ceremony, a commitment ceremony. And I took a picture of the faces, you know, there, because it was just so much beauty, you know, and just seeing this beauty, the beauty and humility of the men doing this work is really exquisite. It's been such a wonderful space to be in. And, you know, at first you kind of, you know, like, you know, the men feel, oh, do I just want to be with a group of men? You know, I like to be around women. And most of the men in the group are men who habitually spend time with women. They're like, this is the first time I've spent so much time with men. Normally I'm hanging around with the woman, you know, but they found such richness in it. And we're finding such preciousness in this group of men who aren't doing necessarily the warrior thing. I mean, they are amazing, you know, men who've accomplished a lot, but don't really need to prove it so much, you know, who are really enjoying this, you know, being in the softness of the group of men together, which is...
Mwah. So I thank you very much, Simon, okay. for this time. Your willingness to unpack it so deeply as you did.
Yeah.
I've really enjoyed being with you. Yeah. It brought back some pearls in my heart.
Yeah.
And I always quote you, now you gave me a new line. I really love that Tantra brings the rainbow where there is darkness. The other one of you that I use a lot, and I always quote you on that, you brought up this saying in that time when we were doing the secret sacramental sex ceremony. Fuck with your heart and love with your genitals.
Yes.
Powerful. Real fucking is in the heart, you know, in the love affair with life, with all the intensity that brings. And the genital just want to love. They're so tender. And so I also see more and more, like, also the lingam, the masculine genital, are very vulnerable, not so arrogant. They're actually very tender, so exposed. You know, they have nowhere to hide. All is in the. I feel so much compassion, you know. Nothing is covert. It's all seen. So, yes. and what I see more and more, that the glands of the penis is a heart. It's in the shape of the heart. And so it's really loving with the tip of the heart, and which is so tender and delicate. So I'm falling more and more in love with the tenderness of men. It's really beautiful to be surrounded by them. So I'm just going to wrap it up by asking you, how does someone sign up? If anybody wants to get involved, any man wants to join you, when does the cohort begin and how do they sign up?
Yeah, so it's going to begin in the new year, probably around the 17th of January. We'll begin. The deadline for applications is the 22nd of December. And I will give you the email address. It is, sorry, it's a new address. I just wanted to keep it separate. It's Sai at vajrahe.art.
Okay, I will write that also in the
It down. Podcast. Yeah.
And they just checking with you. I read here that they need letters from.
Yeah, the first thing is not to check in with me. You need two reference letters from women who you've been close with, who you've shared. Not necessarily sexual intimacy, but you've shared heart space with. It could even be your mother. I long to get one where somebody sends his mother's letter. But it's to share the fire with the woman, and they must write why you're suitable for this program. And so two reference letters from a woman and a letter from yourself saying why you wish to join. Yeah, and it's based on those letters we will... you will enter into the work.
All right. And
so the practice really begins with that, because it's quite tender to ask for those letters.
Yeah.
And who do you ask? So this is, of course, you know, it's like our secret ceremonies, you know, the practice began with the invitation.
Yeah.
You know, some people never came, but they got a whole lot of transmission just from receiving the invite.
True. Some people never came, and yet they did the hardest work. So if someone, I would like to give a link to access this beautiful invitation that you sent to me. Is that on your website?
It's not. I will put it up. I will put it up there. I will put it up online on my website, and I'll send you the link. I'll do that later today.
So the website is saitsu.org.
Yeah.
And I've been exploring it before this call, and you have some really exquisite blog posts. And one of them was about the beginning of the cohort. Now I remember where I read about Dakini and the words. And it's a beautiful read. So I want to invite people that have, you know, that they feel inspired by this, even if you're not going to join Sai.
I think we lost you, Valentina. I am here on my own. I have the microphone. Yes, so I guess I will wrap it up if Val doesn't reappear. I don't know if it's still recording, because maybe it's recorded on Val's computer, in which case it's not. But you can find the details on saitsu.org. I am the host. Hey, yalalele.